how can you add a melody and a beat to the heart of what you're saying, so that it truly connects with people. And I'm still in the process of finding my voice. And I think it is a process, and it's a daily process. And it's, I mean, my father is a farmer, and I think it takes some farming, it takes some cultivating, and to constantly find that voice.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Brad, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Absolutely. This is a huge honor. I love the podcast.
Well, I really appreciate that, especially coming from you, whose work I'm a really big fan of. So you and I met via Soul Pancake, actually. And of course, what people know you most for, or may not know you, but they definitely know your work, which is Kid President on YouTube. So it's really, really cool to have you here and to be able to talk about everything that's led up to this. So on that note, can you tell us a bit about yourself, your story, your journey, your background, and how that has led to all these amazing things that you're creating on the internet?
Okay, so my name is Brad, and I make things for the internet because I have something wrong with me. I've been making things for a long time, specifically around children, specifically around the idea of celebrating childhood, celebrating childlikeness. And Kid President is one of the projects that I had that really connected with a large group of people. I feel like a kid constantly. I feel like a kid who's at the grown-ups table, who got invited to the grown-ups table. We've been making different things, and then suddenly this project connected with people in a way that nothing had before. I am what I like. I think of myself as an accidental filmmaker because I didn't really set out to make videos, but every job I've ever had, I've always ended up with a video camera in my hand. Like any problem, it's like, oh, we should make a video. It's led me here. Hmm.
Well, you having heard a lot of my interviews probably know that I want to dig back deeper into all of this and look at the sort of formative experiences of your life prior to Kid President, even in your own life growing up, you know, parents, influences, mentors, I mean, the types of experiences and people that ultimately, you know, caused you to end up on this path. What were they in your life?
I grew up in a really small town, extremely small town, so much so that almost everybody had the same last name as me, Montague. And I grew up always thinking, oh, that's just what most people's last names are. It's Smith and Montague. And then as I kind of began to slowly expand outside of my town, I began to realize that I was the only one who ever left. I'm the only Montague that left on my town. My dad grew up on the same street. He's lived on the same street his whole life. And so I kind of always just thought, oh, well, that's what I'll do too. Like, I'll just always live in this little town. And then somehow I constantly found myself outside of the town because of little things that I was making. My dad's a farmer. For him to see me constantly doing little drawings and making little movies, it was confusing to him. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I had teachers that encouraged that and that told me that I should keep doing that. In specific, my fourth grade teacher, she was so taken with the little doodles on the back of my essays, more so than my essays, that she began to ask me to keep writing and to write some more, and that she would mail them to the Disney company. And so I came back to school, had all this stuff that I had drawn and things I had recorded on a tape recorder, and she helped me package them up and mail them to Walt Disney. And it was this amazing moment because there was this person in this little town, and I was this little person in this little town. And his teacher had thought that these little things I was making was important enough that someone else who makes things that I knew about and that the whole world knew about should know about too. And that was a huge moment for me because we got something in the mail back from the Walt Disney Company. And it was a letter that said, we, for legal reasons, we don't accept submissions. Mm-hmm. But it also had a note that said, we really thank you for sharing this. Thank you for sharing your voice and to keep going. And that was a huge, huge moment in my life because not only had my teacher told me that my voice mattered, but this giant company, because my teacher had told me, they also thought that what I had to say was worth saying. And so everything I make and do now is constantly going back to that moment when I was a kid and not thinking that what I had to say mattered. And someone looked me in the eyes and said that it does. And so I've just been on a mission to try and make other people feel that same way. And so that's manifested itself in lots of different ways. My wife and I started a camp, and it was the idea was to get junior high and high school students together, and provide like a week long experience where they learn how to live out creativity and compassion, and to just speak into their lives and tell them that their voices matter, what they do matters, and that was a really powerful time for me because I was directing this camp, and yet I wasn't very good at directing the camp. Like I loved the camp, but I couldn't handle the part of the camp where you find out how you provide food for the campers, or you provide housing for the campers. But I was constantly making videos for the campers and constantly making things for them. And one of the little videos that we made connected to the camp was a kid president video.
Hmm. So the teacher and the Walt Disney moment, I've had lots of questions about this. What did that do for you internally, like for your sense of self-esteem, for your sense of bravery and all of that? And how has that carried on throughout your life?
I felt like, and still feel like a complete weirdo, like that this thing, this desire to have to make things and tell stories, it doesn't quite make sense to me, and then at the same time to have somebody to look at you and all of the things that you do that it takes courage to share, that it takes courage to share that side of you. When someone validates that, it's huge, and especially for a child. That's powerful. There's nothing more powerful than to look at somebody else and say, hey, that thing that you just did that you were scared to do, thank you. Like that thing about you that you were worried about people finding out, thanks for doing that. And that teacher was one of many who would go on and say those sorts of things to me. And I think I'm probably one of many, of probably hundreds of students they did that for. It just really stuck. It stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's been super interesting too is as I've met other people, I've found that they have lots of those people in their lives as well who just told them that that thing about them, that desire to sing those songs or to make those films or to do whatever, that there was, it was interesting. and to keep going at that, keep following that path. There's something really special about that.
It's interesting. When I hear you say that, I think about sort of the various messengers that have showed up in my life. The first being a junior high school band director who, for some strange reason, thought I had an exceptional skill at playing the tuba, even though I had just picked up the instrument. And because of that, I committed to every single goal that he saw was possible for me and made every one of them come true.
Yeah. It's like you suddenly believe what the bar they've set for you. You believe what they've said about you. There's a great moment. It was being passed around on the internet recently. I'm so happy it was. It was when Fred Rogers won his Television Hall of Fame achievement, and he had the chance to say whatever he wanted. The speech. I mean, the career of TV, and he gets up on stage, and the thing that he says in this giant room of these famous people in media. Did you hear the motorcycle?
No worries.
But the thing that Fred Rogers says in that moment in his life is he pauses and he asks every single person in the room to think of somebody who loved them into being, who made them the person they are today. And then he even says, I'll watch the clock. And he pulls out his watch and he waits, and there's a moment of silence. And it's just this really special moment. All these people sitting in silence, thinking of the people who encourage them to be who they are. And you can see them crying, wiping away tears. And then he just closes it out by saying how happy they must be to know that you thought of them. Like let them know. Thank you. Bye. I was like, that's how you do it. That's how you do it.
So those moments and those people, let's say you didn't find them when you were younger, or maybe you still haven't found them. Do you think that we can find who they are and figure out when those moments will be in or bring about those moments in our adult lives?
I hope so, because I've needed them again. I've been needing them a lot lately. I always say I write pep talks because I need pep talks. Like the videos we make are super encouraging, but at the heart, they're from somebody who really needs encouragement. Like I think I mentioned, I feel like a kid who's been invited to the grown-ups table, and there's something that I've found is that there's just great power in inviting people into your life to be a mentor, and to kind of like let them know that they're your mentor. And that seems like super elementary, but I'm kind of third grade in my relationships in that I'm like, you're my friend, let's be friends. But I've had to blatantly just say to people, hey, I need you to you're my mentor. This started several years back. I heard someone talking about the presidential cabinet, and that every person needs a cabinet, and so I just started building a cabinet, and I asked the guy who was talking about that. His name's Bob. I just said, "Hey, Bob, will you be on my cabinet?" And he was the first member of my cabinet, and then I asked many other people who I respect, older men who have raised families, and they're the kind of fathers I want to be, professional people who are creatives, who are creating the kinds of things that I think are really meaningful, and just telling them, I need your help. Will you be on my cabinet? And they all said yes so far.
You know, there's something you said multiple times over the course of our conversation that I want to come back to, which is this idea that you're a kid who's been invited to the grown-ups table. And I love that. And I can't help but think that sense that you feel is what enables you to create what you do in the way that you do. And I'm wondering how we bring more of that into our own work.
There's a sense of wonder that if we're not careful, we can lose a sense of joy that is natural to children, and an openness that I think we have to protect in ourselves. And life can get hard and difficult, and it's easy for that part of our lives and ourselves to become muted. But one of the things that I've found is that there's this child within every single one of us. And when I have conversations, and when we've had conversations with people that I'm intimidated by, or that I think, oh, I don't know that we'll have that much in common, it's interesting because when we begin to talk about their childhood, or when we begin to talk about the things they loved as a kid, or who loved them when they were a kid, their eyes light up, they become more comfortable, and we're on a quicker path to becoming close friends. We've done lots of different interviews with Kid President over the past 3 years now, and it'll be with people that I've seen in other interviews, and they've not responded the sort of way they do when there's a child interviewing them, because he can ask them questions in an innocent way, and they listen and they respond. It was interesting when we did a talk with Macklemore, and Macklemore is generally like an upbeat, positive guy, and he was when we talked. But he did this great thing where he kneeled down right there to be on Kid President's level. He's right there with Robbie, and he's laughing, and he can't stop laughing. And we had this really great, playful conversation with him, and he wasn't like trying to be cool. He wasn't trying to like push in a song or album. He was just genuinely excited. And it was the same with the president. Like, we got invited to the Oval Office, and the president, it was like I could see him go from being president of the United States to a really kind grown-up who just wanted to know how this child was doing, like a loving uncle. He asked him about if he had any pets. He asked him about what he's studying in school. And it just, it was so charming to see what that did to the president. Like, his day just sort of got better because he didn't have to put on any front. He didn't have to impress anyone. He could just care about this child's life, and he gave him a tour of the White House, and Robbie asked a question in that room that shook me up. Like, it made me I was embarrassed and I was shocked because the president's showing him all these things in the office, and then he says, and this is the Emancipation Proclamation, and this was a huge part of freeing the slaves. And then Robbie's question was, why were there slaves? And I was stunned, and I was like, oh no, like, the president's going to look at me and he's going to say, like, why haven't you taught him that? And what's wrong with you? And the president's answer was so simple and so beautiful. He literally kneels down. He looked at Robbie and said, I'm so thankful you're growing up in a time where that's a weird thing for you to hear. But there was a time when people thought it was okay to own other people. And you're growing up in a time where that seems like a crazy idea. And he said, I'm really proud of you for asking that. And then they just went on. And it was such a simple moment. And he didn't like dismiss the question. He didn't. He also didn't pass over the heaviness of it. He was just honest and simple. And I look over, and there's a guy who is standing at the door who's one of his servicemen, and he's in tears, and I'm in tears. And there's just a beauty in that childlike simplicity.
So you've been up close and personal with you know, what most of us would consider sort of iconic figures in our culture. Presidents, artists, actors. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff that you guys have done. I'm curious how being up close and personal to these iconic figures in our culture has influenced your own perspectives on life and success, and also on sort of the work that you've done with Kid President after experiencing these kinds of interactions.
Sure. One of the things that I think has to be mentioned is that as I've done each of these things, when I go in that room, there's a kid with me. So Robbie, he'll be like when he's 10 years old, we're there with the president, or we also were with Beyonce or recently with Tom Hanks. When we're in these situations, there's a kid there, and so there's a responsibility there. So I'm feeling the weight and the pressure of getting a great video for the internet. Mm-hmm. But there's a child with me who I love, who's part of my life, who I have a responsibility for, and I want him to learn something, for this to be a productive thing. And so I want him to leave not with like a, oh, isn't that cool? We talked to a celebrity. We're rolling. Like nothing. Like I want him to leave with an understanding and respect of these people as human beings, but at the same time to learn an appreciation and respect of the other human beings who were with him, and the other people who we met along the way. There's a moment where we were with Justin Timberlake that was kind of wild, because we were with Justin Timberlake had been constantly tweeting Kid President videos, doing stuff, and this was just so bizarre to me. But then he'd been so kind and wanted us to meet with him, and we were backstage at one of his shows, and he's being like treating us like we were the most important people in the world. Like he was talking to Robbie about his dogs, and they were talking about basketball, and it was just this really great moment. And then his grandmother came in, and he totally ignored us. And he treated his grandmother like she was Beyonce. He treated his grandmother like she was somebody who was the most famous person in the room. And then that sort of was this cool moment for Robbie to see that's how you treat someone who's older than you that you love, and that's how we celebrate people. And he introduced us to her, and she was so kind, and it was as if the celebrity didn't exist anymore. The celebrity clouds things up in a way that's not healthy or helpful. Instead, like, we should celebrate each other, celebrate everybody. And that's been something I've been working to do with Robbie, to do in myself. And along the way, it's been really, really helpful for us to go about kind of, as we say, in Kid President videos, to treat everybody like it's their birthday. And so let's live that out. What does that look like? And so we've tried to do a really good balance of celebrating teachers, throwing parades for postal workers, doing things for ordinary people, quote unquote, ordinary people. And in that same mix, we'll talk to a celebrity, someone the world is widely celebrating. But then I think it's also cool to, in the same breath, to talk about a kid who's started a soup kitchen, to lift those people up. And that's been kind of a burden and a gift of being able to make the kinds of things we make, is we get to celebrate people that maybe there's not a spotlight on right now.
I want to go back to the beginning of Kid President, and you'd mentioned that you made the very first video as part of the camp that you run. And I'm curious what the impetus was and you know, what it was like in that moment, because, you know, you also mentioned before we hit record about sort of the project finding its voice and the time it's taken. I'm really interested in sort of the evolution of this project and that very first part of it.
So the camp that we did was all about how kids can change the world. So we have all these amazing young people who are doing things in their communities. And it was kind of something that we started thinking, oh, there's a few kids out there who are doing this, but we're going to be the ones who really encourage them to go do more. But that wasn't the case. Like, we found that we were not having trouble finding these young people. Like, there was just hundreds, thousands of them all over who were doing incredible things. And so I was just completely stunned, encouraged, overwhelmed, blown away by their hearts, by their, like, I mean, they were building apps. They were, you know, starting nonprofits. They were raising thousands of dollars. They're doing all this kind of stuff when at an age when I wasn't there when I was their age. And so I was so encouraged by that we were just saying, you know, I think I think kids should be in charge. I think kids should run this camp. I think, you know, a kid should be president. And it was said like kind of as a joke. And then we thought, well, that'd be interesting. And why wouldn't it be funny if Robbie, my little brother-in-law, were president? And so we filmed this little video. I wasn't exactly sure what it was going to be, but I just we made a little cardboard backdrop. We found an old record player, put a tin can for a phone, and a little president name tag, and it was this thing where the minute he got behind the desk, like, he started just dancing, like, which was perfect. It wasn't something I asked him, but I was like, oh, of course you would just dance behind your desk. And then I began asking him questions about how he felt about certain things, and it just, it was such fun. We were laughing a lot. And I cut together a video. And then I realized I still had like maybe an hour of footage. And so I cut together two more videos. And then I really realized that there was something to the two of us playing together. The idea that I would ask him questions and he would give back a response, or I would ask him to say something and then he would say it in a much better way, in this honest, spirited delivery. And then we started seeing how people online were using the videos, that people were using them not as, hey, you should watch this video. They were sharing them as if it was a gift. They were sharing them with other people like it's a card, like, hey, I hope your day gets better. This is for you. And I began to find my voice. The project began to find its voice. And each video kind of began became the idea was just let's see if we can make these gifts for people that you know, they're going to see a lot of things that are going to come across their desk today. I want something to come across their desk that is encouraging and maybe a little funny, and let's see what happens. And that was where we started. And as that response grew, then it became, okay, people are watching the videos. What if we could actually get them to do something different? So we began to like ask the audience to respond, and that's when things really, really began to get even more fun. And I think that's when the entire project began to sing, because it became a real movement, and one that I'm still scratching my head about, and yet I'm really, really thankful for.
How has it changed the relationship, or what's been the impact of Kid President on the relationship between you and Robbie?
Yeah, Well, what's great is that he and I have always been close, always been close friends. We live across the street from each other, and we've always been a family that made things together, that laughed together, that did projects that we hoped would encourage and inspire people, but on a smaller scale, of course. And this I could not have done without the family support that we have. We had a series of videos that just went wildly viral. And when the initial success began to happen, it was like that's manageable. But then when you have something that's completely out of your control, that's being seen across so many different media platforms in a way you never dreamed or planned, that gets scary. And to the point where I was ready to just, okay, we're done. This is not what we signed up for. And because I have such a loving family around me, Robbie's mom and dad are my mother and father-in-law, and I just adore them. And they, along with my wife, Robbie's sisters, they were like, you know what, this is encouraging people, and we're behind you, and we support this, and we need to keep doing it. And we're with you. We will say no to these things that don't make sense for us or for a family. And we will help you protect this. And let's continue to do something special. And that's such a gift, because they have allowed this and supported this by protecting it and by protecting us. They've just allowed Robbie and I to do what we do, which is have fun and hopefully make some people happy in the process.
There's more of my conversation with Brad after this short message from our sponsors. I'd like to tell you about Cervata, a rapidly growing startup that has reinvented how you get consumer research for every decision, testing creative, measuring demand for new products, tracking consumer trends, and more. Imagine debating a colleague about which logo to pick for a new product or discussing a consumer trend. They'll go by gut feel, while you'll use Cervata to ask hundreds of highly targeted consumers overnight to give you hard data for your decision. Cervata's secret is a brand new tech that collects correspondence via the scale of the web, as opposed to slow and old-fashioned panels. And the best part for unmistakable creative listeners, you get to name your own discount. Cervata will match the respondents you purchase at no cost with no limit. If you need to reach 200 millennial females in Florida, you'll get 400 for the same price. 2,000 baby boomers in the Midwest, you'll get 4,000. All of you have a decision this week that requires reliable data. So why wait? To redeem this offer, just visit cervata.com/creative. That's cervata.com/creative. Now, back to my conversation with Brad. What's been the impact on him?
Yeah, well, Robbie is, this upcoming year, he will be, he's, as he calls, a preteen. And he is very proud of becoming a preteen. He sings songs about becoming a preteen. He thinks that's the golden age. He can't wait. He has always had this light about him. The kind that when he walks in a restaurant, that he can command the room, even though he's very small. And so he's always had this shining personality that was bright and bubbly. And because both he and his sister have a bone condition, osteogenesis imperfecta, it's usually called like a brittle bone condition. So it's both, they have bones that break. So he's been in casts, he's been, you know, had walkers and wheelchairs. So he's sort of used to standing out, and also used to a lot of travel. And it's interesting because it's like he was basically prepared for this. This was not a huge shift in that way, because people would stop sometimes before his face was known, just to like say hi, just to like take a picture. So that's interesting. And looking back, it's just so, and looking back, it's one of those things we can see, like, it's just our entire family's almost been prepared for this journey and this adventure. He now, we've worked incredibly hard the past couple of years, to keep life as normal as possible. So for him, filming happens with me, once a week for just a little bit of time. And then the rest of the time spent school and family and friends. And so he has an idea of the impact that this project's had, but only to the point, not to the point of the celebrity of this. I don't think he has a grasp of that. Uh-huh. He does have what we share with him is we share the stories where people have been encouraged. We share the stories where people send us letters or mail about things they did because we mention it in a video. And that's the kind of thing we want him to – the takeaway for him is that you have an impact and you can have an impact for good on people. And by you being who you are and encouraging other people to help people where they are, you're doing something really important. And so that's been the big takeaway for him. And I'm beyond proud of who he's growing into be.
So one of the things that you have talked about is this idea of the project finding its voice. And at the very beginning, you said that when you guys started, this connected in a way unlike anything ever else had before. And I'm wondering how we find that in our own work, finding the thing that connects in a way that never has before, and finding the voice of whatever it is we're creating in the world.
Yeah. That's a good question. You're good at these questions.
I've done this a lot.
You should do this. I heard Jonathan Richman, the singer, say one time that say what's honest, say what's true, and sing it. And that's been important to me. And I think that helps you find that voice. Is this honest? Is this honestly from your heart of hearts? Is this honestly what you want to say, how you want to say it? And then is this true? Like, how will this ring true for other people? How will this affect them? Should they interact with this? Should they live this out? And then sing it? It's like, just sing it. Like, what is the best possible way that this message can get out? Like, how can you add a melody and a beat to the heart of what you're saying, so that it truly connects with people? And I'm still in the process of finding my voice, and I think it is a process, and it's a daily process, and it's. And my father is a farmer, and I think it takes some farming. It takes some cultivating and to constantly find that voice. And I think I'm pretty excited because I think there are a lot of people out there who we're living in a time now where people are able more and more to share their voices. And at the same time, I think people are able more and more to encourage each other to share their best voice. I don't know that I've made much sense with that.
I think you made plenty of sense. I wasn't expecting a blueprint at all, because that would be almost the antithesis of finding your voice. You know, it's funny. The reason that question was on my mind is because this morning I was writing and I thought, you know, we don't find our voice because we never lose our voice. We have to connect with it.
Yes, yes.
And the process of writing and the process of creating is how we start to deepen the connection with our voice until the most authentic parts of it emerge.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's a big thing. And when I think my work most clicks is when it's really connecting with that voice within me that has always been there, that is always there. That voice that other people have seen glimpses of and have said, "Hey, that's you. That's the person we know." And you can see it in other people's work and filmmakers and films where you're like, "Okay, that's something new. That's something exciting. That's truly their voice. That's their heart on screen."
I love that. So I have a question about the future of all of this, and specifically the future of somebody like Robbie. Like, what does it look like when you've had this sort of impact and this level of celebrity? I mean, how does that change the way that you're growing up and the decisions you make for the future? Or does it? Am I completely off there?
Well, there's lots of versions of how this could go. When you look at the normal trajectory of a child star, there's some pretty depressing stories.
Yeah.
And from the get-go, that's never been the goal, and that's never been what we want or desire. This is something different. So will he always be kid president? No, he won't always be a kid, and he won't always be a president. But we will always be a family that makes things, that encourages people. And so that won't change. Trying to find the right to... I apologize for the long pause for your editors here. It's been a question of what's the story we want to tell. And the story we don't want to tell, we know very clearly. Like, we don't want this to be the story of a child who burns out and who loses the joy, who loses that wonder. This is the story of a family who made things and who tried to encourage people. And it's going to evolve and change. There's so many other things I want to do and say beyond Kid President that I've been working on and dreaming and scheming up. But the project at hand right now, I felt the responsibility to see this through. And we're going to begin to wrap this up in a way that I think will tie a bow on the presidency, the kid presidency, and at the same time transition him to civilian life, at least for a bit. And then at the same time, give a proper transfer of power to children everywhere. And that's what we really want to see, and I've made it this to where it's his decisions and what he wants to do and make in the world, and he and I have always made things together, and I think that who knows what else we'll do, but the project at hand is very important, and there's a lot of kids and classrooms that need this right now.
Well, Brad, this has been amazing. So I'm going to ask you my final question, which is how we finish all our interviews. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
think it's anyone who has the courage and boldness to live into their true selves and to allow that to affect every decision they make, be it what they say, what they do, what they make, what they wear. I think when someone is unmistakably creative, it's when they're being their true selves, because we all have that ability within us, but it's tapping into that still small childlike voice that's there, crying out, play, like, let's play. And it's exciting when we see someone who's unmistakable. We love it.
Well, Brad, this has been phenomenal. Really, really heartwarming and touching. And, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share your story and, your journey and your insights with our listeners.
I mean, absolutely. And I'm just disappointed because I love listening to this podcast and I always get something out of it, and I won't be able to listen to this one.
Well, again, really, really appreciate it. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that. Wednesday on The Unmistakable Creative.
Maybe this is good because maybe something else is going to happen. Maybe this will get better. Maybe I can accept this and still be okay. And then you get more specific. Maybe I need to start marketing better. Maybe I need to set up more meetings. Maybe I need to speak to my boss. Maybe. And all of a sudden you go from this place where you're so afraid that you're not okay, and you recognize, hey, there are other possibilities out there. And just acknowledging that, again, it takes you from this little cramped place in your brain where you think things aren't working out, and it takes you to a larger place, and you will feel your mind calm. You will feel your body calm because you're going to access more hope and possibility. And the minute you do that, everything shifts and your mind actually becomes more present. And it doesn't mean the fear is going to go away, but it's going to be diluted by everything else. And I just could almost guarantee if someone does this for 20 minutes, they're going to feel lighter. They're going to feel more open. They're going to be more present. And then things are going to start to shift. So it's really, it's a practice, but it's very real.
Allison Carmen talks to us about how we find hope and possibility in uncertain times.